Now we both kinda like it. Now we both kinda know that if we're ever gonna make it, we just need to let go.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on September 15th, 2016. My guest today is a .NET developer who works for Rackspace, Steven Swenson. How are you?
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. Now, as a developer, I find that encryption is a topic that makes me very nervous. It seems like it's one of those difficult details that I want to leave to someone else to handle. Would you agree with that?
I think that's very common, and I kind of disagree with that now. We're kind of entering an age in app development where developers are going to be expected to do more and more with crypto, and I think it's really important for developers to understand what crypto is available out there for them to use and the correct application of it. What we've seen in the past is crypto has basically been handled by the network and engineering layer. So we're going to worry about encryption at the network layer. We're going to be worried about encryption through third-party applications or outside vendors to handle it for us. You can talk about VPN or different certificates and SSL layers you can have on servers. But we're coming into an era in which applications are expected to handle certain layers of encryption themselves. We're seeing that more and more with messaging apps like WhatsApp, and Facebook is actually announced that they're going to start doing more and more with encryption with their messaging application.
Oh, that's good. I always just sort of assumed those chat apps are completely insecure and I never send anything sensitive on them.
Most of the time, that is a very accurate assumption, yes. But things are changing, and it's going to be a very interesting time in the next couple of years with regard to how people are using widespread encryption. At the business level, which is where most developers that are probably listening to this are working, it's becoming more and more vital to the point where even legislation has kicked in. Very obvious things like credit card, PCI requirements. You can get into a lot of trouble if you don't have all your T's crossed and your I's dotted when it comes to stuff like that. So when it comes to sensitive information, leaks are obviously always bad, but if you do have a leak, it's a whole lot better for that really sensitive information to be encrypted well than to not be encrypted at all.
Right. Now, what do you work on at Rackspace, and what can you tell us, anyway, about what kind of work you do with encryption there?
I'm a developer, so I've done a number of different things, from just straight-up web development to back-end services, microservices, and right now I've been spending a lot of time in deployment automation, working with PowerShell and Chef, and CI/CD pipelines, things like that, trying to streamline some of our application deployments and make those deployments more reliable. I actually work on a team that is part developers and part engineers. Now, a lot of people call that DevOps, and we will quite often call that DevOps, but in reality, it's kind of a mixed bag because we have some people that are DevOps. Historically, is everybody does a little bit of both, whereas we run at a scale where that's not entirely practical. So we have some people that are just full-time engineers. We've got one guy who's a full-time DBA. We have other teams that are just nothing but pure development teams that don't do any engineering at all. So as a developer on a dev engineering DevOps-y kind of team, I tend to bridge the gap between the developer and the engineer. That's one of the reasons why I got so interested in crypto and security and AppSec and things like that, because that tends to fall on the shoulders of engineers more and more often. But I tend to view things as a developer. I want things to be secure as well. So I'll look at where we can do things from an engineering perspective and then try to fill in the gaps from a development perspective and say, no, we can't do this at an engineering level. We need to write the appropriate code to handle it securely. A really good example of that is I was talking with a manager a couple years ago. We were talking about some particularly sensitive information and how it probably needed to be stored very securely. And he said, well, you know, SQL Server has built-in encryption. I was like, yeah, that's true. And the newer versions of SQL Server have actually improved on this a great deal. But at the time, when you talked about SQL Server and encryption, basically you're just talking about it was encrypted on disk, mm-hmm. right? And so if you had a SQL injection vulnerability or something else like that, that really didn't help you in that scenario. So it's situations like that where people may think they have their bases covered, but they actually don't. They need to do some more work at the application level. Going into what I work on with regards to crypto at Rackspace, we use some password hashing algorithms, notably Bcrypt, which is different than just a normal hashing algorithm. It's a hashing algorithm specifically for passwords and makes it extremely difficult to crack and to brute force. We also work with some symmetrical encryption, which is also referred to as AES, and we use that for storing particularly sensitive information sometimes that can't be hashed because we have to be able to decode it and right. work with it, and usually in back-end services, things like that. A lot of times we will get some information from a front-end service and immediately encrypt it, and then we can send it to our back-end services securely or store it either in a database or in a message queue or something like that and know that it's secure.
Going back to the password hashing that you mentioned there, this is something that a lot of developers, myself included, just chronically get wrong. It seems that whenever I decide to choose some sort of hashing scheme, that those algorithms will get broken, right? I used to use MD5 back in the day, and MD5 mm-hmm. has been broken for a long time. I'm sure some people are still using it, unfortunately. SHA-1, I believe, is also broken to some extent. And yep. I think that's going to continue happening. So, you mentioned Bcrypt. That seems to be what is recommended nowadays. Now, how do I stay up on this to make sure that I'm, not using some outdated hashing scheme or one-way encryption scheme?
A couple things to talk about there.
Okay.
Bcrypt is not the one that's recommended anymore. They now recommend a new one called Scrypt.
See what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. One of the things that I've learned from talking with crypto professionals over the past couple of years is that every cryptographic algorithm, whether it be hashing or symmetrical encryption or private public key encryption, it all has a life cycle. It all has a beginning yeah. and a middle, and it all has an end. So you do have to stay up on it. You do have to make sure that your software is flexible enough to be able to migrate from one to another. And it's not something that you can just implement, brush your hands and say, yay, I did it, I'm all done. It's security, like any other process, is ongoing. It's just something you have to be vigilant about. I will say that compared to other technologies, crypto actually moves slower. And that's very intentional because the crypto community, the security community, they don't just throw things out there and see if it works. That's how lots of things work nowadays with, sure. Fail fast, fail quick kind of mentality. With crypto, they are very, very rigorous about it. And it starts at the academic level and then comes down to the crypto professionals, and they try to do what they can with it. And then it slowly seeps into the community. And we've seen a really good example of that with elliptical curve cryptography that is starting to replace RSA. That's a private public key type of cryptography. Most HTTPS now uses elliptical curve cryptography, or ECC. That's just a really good example of something that is starting to get used a lot, but it is not ubiquitous. You're not going to find it in every single library. If you go into the .NET libraries, you're going to find RSA, but you're not going to find ECC right now because there's still a lot of different flavors of ECC. Everybody's still trying to figure out which one they like the best and which one works the best. So it's still very much in flux. If you're doing password hashing right now, you really should think about re-architecting your application to use what I would refer to as a quote-unquote real identity service. All the major players offer them. You can get one for free from Microsoft through Azure. Azure Identity Service for a moderate number of accounts is absolutely free. They do that as a service to try to bring people onto their platform. And it's a very, very full-fledged service. It includes two-factor auth and all kinds of wonderful features that you don't have to worry about and you don't have to code it. All you have to do is hook OAuth up to your software and make that work, and you can have a free identity system and you'll never have to worry about hashing passwords again. For that exact use case, that's what I recommend.
Well, that sounds like music to my ears. I don't have to worry about the hashing. I'll let Azure handle that for me.
Exactly.
Okay, so you mentioned a couple already, but can you list some .NET tools and libraries that I should be looking at if I'm interested in encryption and hashing?
The two major ones are just the core .NET, not .NET Core, but the main .NET library itself. It actually has a lot of crypto in it. Does not have bcrypt or scrypt in it.
Right.
But those are available very easily through a couple of different NuGet packages. If you search around for that, you won't have any problem finding those. There's also another library called libsodium, and that's kind of a play on words. It's modeled after another library called NaCl. You know, salt, if you get that.
Yeah.
So libsodium is an open source project. It is cross-platform. There are libraries for multiple languages. There is a really smart crypto expert named Adam Caudill, who I highly recommend following on Twitter and reading his blog. He helps maintain the .NET library for that open source project. It includes pretty much everything that is now the accepted standard, including scrypt and most of the accepted ECC flavors of encryption. And pretty sure it includes mobile, but don't hold me to that. What I would recommend is if you want to start cutting your teeth on encryption, just open up a .NET project and start using the crypto stuff that's in there. A lot of people get really concerned that they may not be using the latest and greatest. Like you said, there's some things that are good to use, there's some things that are cutting edge, and there's some things that are completely obsolete. So if you're using DES or triple DES, that's obsolete. If you're using AES, that's the current standard right now for symmetrical encryption. And you can very easily open up a .NET project and start messing around with it. I've even implemented it using PowerShell, and it wasn't hard. Now, I'm not talking about implementing the AES algorithm itself. I'm talking about using the AES algorithm. If you can use a stream, you can use most of these algorithms within .NET. You're just going to treat it like a black box. There's a couple of things that you might want to investigate in terms of best practices. Do a couple of Google searches on that. You'll find some code that'll help you out there. And just start plugging away at it. That's the best way to learn.
So I've got a question for you that maybe is more philosophical and not answerable. But you know, some of these tools are open source, so you can go in and look at the code and things. But if I'm bringing in a library, even if it's Microsoft's library, how can I be sure that that library itself doesn't have some sort of backdoor or exploit in it? How deep should I go in my trust of software?
Even if something's open source doesn't mean it doesn't have backdoors in it. Let me
Sure.
say that first of all. The more a library is used and the more it is inspected and maintained, the better it's going to be in, with that regard. That's one of the things that Libsodium has going for it, is that it is widely used, and any pull requests into that are going to have a lot of scrutiny on it. Something like a Microsoft library, the main library within Windows has actually been certified by the DoD, but the libraries themselves aren't going to have backdoors in them necessarily. It's more going to be the algorithm that needs to have the backdoor. If you alter an algorithm to include a backdoor, with some exception, of course, most people are going to spot it right away, or it's just going to break all compatibility. So a lot of times when you hear about people trying to sneak backdoors into crypto, they're usually talking about the algorithms themselves. And that happens very early in the process of developing a crypto algorithm. And it usually happens at the academic level. And you'll hear rumors about, oh, so-and-so might be with the NSA and trying to tweak the algorithm like this, so it makes it easier for them to do that and things like that. You hear that sometimes.
Yeah.
But if you have a library that's very compatible and very well maintained and reviewed, then I think you're pretty safe. If you're sticking with libraries that are baked into .NET, baked into Java, they come out of the box with Python or something like that, you're going to be pretty safe, because you're going to know a lot of people are going to be using that library. And if there is anything wrong with it, you're going to hear about it very quickly.
So once I've shipped my software and I've used some encryption in there, some hashing, how can I sleep at night? How can I be sure that I did it correctly?
that's the golden question. There are ways, even if you're using the latest and greatest software, you can use the RSA with the best key, and you can use AES with the highest key length. And there are definitely ways you can shoot yourself in the foot. The best way to shoot yourself in the foot is with key management. And that's a tough problem that the industry is still in the process of trying to solve. Key management is, okay, you've got crypto, but how do you use that crypto? Where do you keep the keys to get the information out of that crypto? And so the whole problem of key management, where does the key live and where do you store it and how do you move it around? That's something that a lot of vendors are trying to come up with very innovative solutions. Microsoft and Amazon have key management solutions that you can use off the shelf. You kind of have to drink their Kool-Aid for that. Yeah, I mean, you really should read up on best practices for using any particular type of crypto. Some of the devil is in the details, of course.
Yeah.
So there is a very good book called Cryptographic Engineering. It can put you a little bit into the weeds of how the crypto itself exactly works, but if you're not interested in that, that's okay. It includes other chapters on just how to use crypto to build things, create secure channels between two computers if you feeling masochistic and you want to do that manually yourself. It's a very good book. You can go into as much detail as you want to with it, and it has good practical examples of how not to do things and what options to use. One of the things that I emphasize in my talk when I talk about this kind of stuff is I typically will run through, if you're using this type of crypto, here are the options that are very safe. If you don't deviate from this, you're going to be in really good shape. I think that's a really important point, is just because you're using the latest crypto does not necessarily mean that you're free and clear and you've done everything perfectly.
Some of the things you've mentioned I'm going to put in the show notes. You can go view those at crosscuttingconcerns.com. Do you have any other resources that you'd like to mention to learn more about encryption?
I would recommend Adam Caudill's blog, and he's a good guy to follow on Twitter as well. And just start plugging away with code and start messing around with it. It's a great experience to have under your belt. And once you start messing with it, I think the fog will dissipate and you'll see that it's not that difficult to play with. It's just streaming and it's just bytes of data. It's not too difficult. And I think it's a lot of fun.
And before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to promote? How people can contact you, etc.?
Best way to contact me is on Twitter. I am CTI Geek on Twitter. That's also my GitHub profile. I've got a couple of open source projects out there.
My guest today has been Steven Swenson. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Macrobes 2016. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. The hosting for this podcast was made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Skype, Audacity, and Camtasia Recorder. The theme music is by the Dirty Truckers. You can buy their music on Amazon or iTunes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on a future episode, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com and submit your name and idea.